Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On October 5th, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral argument for Carney v. Adams, a First Amendment case involving a long-standing Delaware state constitutional provision that limits judges affiliated with any one political party to no more than a bare majority on the state's three highest courts. The remaining seats are reserved for the other major party, in effect barring members of minor parties or unaffiliated persons from joining the state's three highest courts. To discuss this case's oral arguments, we have Michael Domino, professor of law at Widener University Commonwealth Law School.
Carney v. Adams concerns the constitutionality of one section, Article 4, Section 3 of the Delaware State Constitution. It was challenged as a violation of the First Amendment. What the section of the state constitution does is that it attempts to ensure a partisan balance on certain of the state courts by requiring that the courts be filled with equal members or simply a bare majority of one of the two major parties, with the rest of the seats on that court filled with members of the other party. To be specific, the section of the Delaware Constitution applies to the state Supreme Court and the state Superior Court. And what it says for both of those is that all of the judges on the court must be chosen from the Republican or Democratic parties. It doesn't name them by name. It says major parties, but it's the Democratic and Republican parties. All the judges must be either Democrats or Republican. And for courts, if the court has an even number of judges, then there must be even numbers, an equal number of Republicans and Democrats. If the court in question has an odd number of judges, like the Delaware Supreme Court does, it has five judges, then a bare majority should be of one party and the remaining judges should be of the other major party. The reason they do this is it's through an innovation at the end of the 19th century, a constitutional convention that Delaware had at the end of the 19th century. And the reason that they adopted this was to promote the nonpartisan administration of justice and to advance public confidence in the courts as nonpartisan institutions. One effect, the negative effect of this kind of partisan balance, however, is that it affects people's ability to serve as judges and disqualifies people on the basis of their partisan affiliation. So, for example, if the Delaware Supreme Court has three Democrats and two Republicans, and one of the Republicans leaves, well, only Republicans will be eligible to fill that vacancy, because if we chose another Democrat, then you'd have a 4-to-1 court, and that would violate the constitutional rule about the partisan balance on the court. So if you're not a Republican, then you wouldn't be eligible for that vacancy. You would be excluded from consideration for the vacancy because of your partisan affiliation. And people's ability to join a political party is, of course, protected by the First Amendment, an aspect of speech and association. And so the claim is that this constitutional provision calling for partisan balance on the court interferes with, imposes a penalty on the exercise of First Amendment rights by saying, well, you can join whatever party you want, but if you're not a Republican, then you're not going to be eligible for this spot. And so for that reason, it was challenged as unconstitutional. A further related effect is that people who are not members of either of the two major parties, that is, people who are independents, who are not members of any party at all, or people who are members of third parties, those people are not eligible for judgeships at all. And so, if I can summarize, there are two provisions here that are at issue. There is what the court referred to today as the bare majority rule, and that prohibits one party from holding more than a bare majority of seats on the court. And then there is the major party rule, which prohibits governors from appointing judges who are not members of the two major parties, the bare majority rule and the major party rule. And today at oral argument, there seemed to be considerable support for the bare majority rule. Delaware's interest in achieving this nonpartisan or bipartisan courts to make sure there's some kind of balance in terms of political ideology and party membership on the court. So that interest, the court seemed to be quite sympathetic to. However, there seemed to be considerable skepticism or opposition to the major party rule, the idea that the Delaware state constitution would exclude entirely and forever people who are adherents of minor parties or people who are unaffiliated with either party. The idea that that provision would exclude them from being judges entirely was met with some opposition from at least some of the justices. So a bit about this case in particular. It was brought by a man named James Adams. He had been a lifelong Democrat, but he left the party in 2017 because the party was not liberal enough for his taste. He viewed himself more as a Bernie Sanders-style independent, and so he left the Democratic Party. He wanted to be a judge, but once he left the Democratic Party, he considered it to be futile to apply for a judgeship since the constitutional provisions that I've just referenced rendered him ineligible. He did apply for judicial office once in 2009. At the time, he was a Democrat, so he was eligible, but he was not chosen to fill the judicial office. Then he considered applying again in 2017 after becoming an independent, but he did not actually follow through and apply. Instead, he challenged the constitutional rule that rendered him ineligible. The Third Circuit ruled in his favor and struck down this provision, but it created a conflict in doing so with the decisions of two other circuits that addressed similar, though not identical, claims. In decisions from the Sixth and Seventh Circuits, those courts concluded that it was permissible to consider partisan affiliation in the selection of judges because of judges' high-ranking position and their ability to affect policy through their decisions. The Third Circuit, however, disagreed and held that the partisan balance provisions unconstitutionally interfered with Adams's First Amendment associational right. The court said that the provisions were unconstitutional even as applied to members of the major parties because they would disqualify would-be judges who were not members of the right political party at any given moment. The court went on at considerable length to talk about how judges should not be considered policymakers, and because they're not policymakers, in particular because they are not, because their job is not to bring about the preferred policies of the political party that is then in power. And judges, even when judges make policy, they do it without the goal of implementing the policy positions of the party in power. And because of that, the Third Circuit held that judges should be chosen by means other than their political party membership. And for that reason, the court said that it was unconstitutional to exclude a potential judge because of his party affiliation. Now, that's the way the case gets to the Supreme Court. The merits question is a First Amendment question that relates to so-called patronage decisions. The big three patronage decisions of Elrod, Branty, and Rutan are the major ones. But before the court can get to that First Amendment topic, there's a standing problem that Mr. Adams faces. As I said, he has challenged the constitutionality of this section of the Delaware Constitution without first applying for and being turned down for a judgeship because he's an independent. So in 2017, when he became an independent, he says he wanted to be a judge and he considered applying, but he decided not to apply because he thought it was a waste of time, given that the article of Delaware Constitution made him ineligible. It would be the same sort of thing as to, you know, why would I bother to go through and try to run for president if I'm under 35 years old when the Constitution makes me ineligible anyway? And that's what his position was here. Why should I have to go through the motions of filling out an application when the Constitution provision makes it impossible for me to be selected? And for that reason, because it would have been futile for him to apply, the Third Circuit said that there wasn't a standing problem, that he could challenge these provisions of the state constitution even without himself filling out an application first, because standing shouldn't require people to go through useless exercises in form. There was some pushback on that idea from the U.S. Supreme Court today, though. At least certain justices that are usually identified as conservative, Chief Justice Roberts started off the questioning, and he focused on the standing question. A couple other justices also asked about standing issues. And so if the court were to reach the First Amendment issues here, it would have to explain why it was okay for this person, Mr. Adams, to raise this claim, given that his status as an independent didn't exclude him from consideration. Since if he didn't fill out an application, he wouldn't have been considered anyway. The natural response to that, which is one that the Third Circuit bought, that Justice Kagan referenced in the oral argument today, is that we don't require people to go through futile gestures. All right, now on to the merits. Adams's claim rests on the three big patronage cases: Elrod versus Burns, Branty versus Finkel, and Rutan versus Republican Party of Illinois. All of those three cases protect certain government employees against patronage-based discipline. But because party affiliation is obviously important for some government jobs, Secretary of State, for example, or some other government agency, the court has to draw a line between the positions for which patronage is an acceptable employment qualification and the positions for which the First Amendment would protect an employee's ability to affiliate with the party of his choosing and not be disciplined for being a member of the wrong political party. In Elrod, the first of these cases from 1976, the court initially suggested that policymaking employees could be chosen on the basis of party affiliation, but people who simply implemented policy that was made by others would be protected from party-based discipline. In the second case, however, Branty, the court revised the test and said that party affiliation could be used only where there was an appropriate requirement, where partisanship was an appropriate requirement for the effective performance of the public office involved. So instead of asking whether there was a policy-making job, we say, well, is party membership an appropriate requirement? And so, for example, ensuring that the Federal Election Commission is balanced by party, if you have not more than three members of any given party on the Federal Election Commission, that achieving that partisan balance makes party affiliation an appropriate requirement for selecting commissioners. But as the example in the case was, a university's football coach may not be chosen on the basis of party affiliation, even though he does, in a sense, make a certain kind of policy. He might be a policy maker in some regard, but he is not to be chosen on the basis of party affiliation, because partisanship is not an appropriate requirement for the effective performance of his job as a football coach. The Court of Appeals in this case, as I noted, concluded that partisan affiliation was not appropriate to consider in the selection of a judge, because judges make policy, or when they make policy, they don't do so based on the partisan goals of the party in power. Now, this conclusion, I believe, is quite suspect. I think the decision is wrong on those kind of terms. I think that the courts do make policy. They unquestionably have a policy impact. Their decisions have a policy impact. And while it is true, as the Third Circuit said, that their job is not to implement one party's vision of society or one party's policy prescriptions, it's not at all clear that that's the only reason for considering party affiliation. Now, it's one of the reasons. In the early patronage cases, the court drew this distinction based on high-level executive officials and low-level executive officials, and said you can consider party for the high-level officials, but not for the low-level ones, because they thought, well, what do these low-level employees do? They just implement policy made by others, and so you don't need a government office that is staffed top to bottom with Republicans to make sure that the office carries out a Republican agenda. Instead, you just need the policymakers in the office to be Republicans, and then to select the rest without regard to party affiliation. Well, that's one reason why we might protect certain low-level employees from a partisan-based requirement. But there is a second reason. The desirability of the partisan balance on high-level policy-making bodies gives a second reason for considering party affiliation, and I think that the Supreme Court of the United States is going to agree with this critique. As we see with the Federal Election Commission example that I just gave you, that the government might be permitted to consider partisan affiliation when choosing those officials in certain instances. And I think that the court is more likely to agree with the test as formulated by the Seventh Circuit in disagreeing with the Third. The Seventh Circuit said it's okay to consider partisan affiliation when you're choosing officials, and this is the quote, whose work is politically sensitive and who exercise significant discretion in the performance of their duties, unquote. So the test, as the Seventh Circuit phrased it, is less one of whether your job is focused on implementing a certain policy agenda and more on what discretion you have. If your job in the governmental agency is more or less purely administrative in the ministerial sense, if you don't have discretion, then we can treat you as a civil servant. We can protect you from discipline on the basis of your party affiliation. On the other hand, if you are exercising significant amounts of discretion, then your party affiliation is going to be relevant, and we can choose people based in part on belonging to the right party. So where does this leave Mr. Adams and his case? So I think that because of that, because of what I've just explained, I don't think that he's going to win on the basis of his broad argument. I don't think the Third Circuit is simply going to be affirmed and that the Supreme Court's going to agree with everything the Third Circuit says. I think the court is going to indicate that the bare majority requirement, the requirement that one party not have anything more than a bare majority on the courts, is constitutional. If I'm going to give a prediction, that's my prediction. However, Adams does have a fairly strong argument that the major party requirement is unconstitutional, that completely categorically excluding people from consideration because they don't belong to either the Republican or the Democratic parties might be unconstitutional.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.